Welcome to the Archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In this archive edition, we go back into California history about 150 years and visit with Pio Pico, the last Mexican governor of California. Pio Pico was born at the San Gabriel Mission in 1801 of Spanish, Italian, Indian, and African ancestry. Both as a politician and as an entrepreneur, he espoused the view of many native-born Californarios, as they were called, regarding the distant seat of government that controlled what was then California. As the last Mexican governor of California, Pio Pico presided over the secularization of the missions and turned over their vast holdings to private hands. Although he fled California during the American takeover in the late 1840s, Pio Pico returned to build the first major hotel in Los Angeles. Later, he served on the Los Angeles City Council. I met with Pio Pico in the person of Roberto Garza in February of 1998, and I asked him to tell us about his life.
I was born in the Mission of San Gabriel in 1801. My parents and my grandparents moved from Sinaloa and Sonora in Mexico. And my parents, Señor Don José María Pico y Señora María Eustaquia Gutiérrez González, had 10 children. I was the fourth. I had 7 sisters and 2 brothers.
Among your brothers and sisters, were you a leader in the family?
Yes. My oldest brother, who became a soldier, he sort of went on his own, and then one of my sisters got married. So by 1819, when my father died, I became partially responsible for the well-being of my family.
You were only 18 years old then.
That's correct.
What responsibility was that?
Well, on the one hand, I had to provide for food and find ways for to make a living, provide living quarters for my family. When my father died, he didn't have anything at all. He left us with nothing except his military uniform.
But there was a home where you were living.
Actually, that if my memory is correct, I think we were living in, we had some living quarters as the garrison since my father served in the military.
So it wasn't really a home that the Pico family owned?
Not at that time. Not until I started with my business. I opened up a country store, and I did very well. So after a while, I did build an adobe for my mom and my sisters.
How old were you then?
I would say about 22, 23.
I'd like to jump forward a little bit in your life. When you were the governor of California, I'd like to learn a little bit about that.
Okay. I became governor twice in 2 different occasions, first time in 1831, second time in 1845. And the 2 of them were kind of coincidences because the central government of Mexico had sent the first time in 1831, Señor Victoria, whom the assembly did not agree on the way he was governing the territory. And we opposed to his views, to his decisions. We fought him, we won, and he sent him back to Mexico, and then I became governor. On the second occasion, it was very similar. But this time it was Governor Michel Torena. The year was 1845, 44 is when the problem started. And just like in 1831, I held the position of primer vocal, which is the equivalent of the Speaker of the Assembly. And the most important person after the governor. So the second time, I became governor, provisional governor, and then I was officially recognized by the central government in Mexico.
Those times were very different than now, Señor Pico. There wasn't an ability to travel. There were no cars. There were no paved roads. There was no telephone. There was no electricity. How did you communicate with the people of the state of California?
Well, we had, for the most part, we traveled by horse. And when the distances were short, we used wagons. But there were times when it was easier for us to travel by sea. So going from San Diego to Monterrey, it was easier to just get on a boat. And
how long did that take?
I am not sure. At this point, I don't know exactly, but it took, I would say, at least a day and a half. Traveling from San Diego to Los Angeles was a trip that I made several times because I enjoy bullfights, and there were occasions where it would take me a whole day to travel from San Diego to Los Angeles, but I had to use at least two horses on the way.
To go from San Diego to Los Angeles.
Right.
Tell us about the bullfights that you enjoyed. Were you a spectator, or were you a matador, a toreador?
Actually, I did participate on the bullfights. It was fun to have the beast coming close to us, and we were playing with death in some respects. Of course, I don't recall fighting any real brave bulls, but we had a good time, and we enjoyed ourselves.
I want to talk a little bit more about what California was like, what it was like for an average person like yourself. You were born into a very poor family, and you were able to see a lot of people. You gained a lot of wealth in your life, and then some of it I don't think was with you when you died.
I saw with great pleasure the increase of my wealth. There were certain situations that were favorable to me. The Mexican government was granting lands to those who were willing to work the land. Of course, we had many foreigners who saw the opportunities, and they knew that land was practically given away by the government. In the case of foreigners, they needed to embrace two things. One, they had to be Mexican citizens. They had to learn Spanish, and they had to embrace the Catholic faith as well.
In order to do what?
In order to obtain land grants. Of course, many others found different ways. Some of the foreigners married our señoritas, and with their family, when the señoritas inherited their father's land, it's just they became part of it.
It passed on to the foreign husband.
Correct.
The non-Mexican husband.
That's correct.
Well, what was life like? Tell us about the food that you ate.
We had the foods that are typical Mexicans. We had tortillas. We had Indian girls doing the cooking for us. And there were times when we had fandangos that lasted for a few days.
Gran fiestas.
Grandes fiestas. And one of the ways we enjoy ourselves were with horse races. I was a very good horse rider, and I enjoyed feeling the wind in cool nights when I was traveling by horse.
You got up when the sun rose, went to bed when the sun went down?
That's correct. In many ways, that's the way we did it. We worked hard, but we also had a good time.
The agriculture. Did you have farms, ranches? I know that you did, sir.
Well, we had, first when I served as administrator for the San Luis Rey Mission, we had different crops, wheat, corn, and we also had animals that pasture over our lands. And We had a place where we slaughtered the animals, and we divided the good meat first to the girls and then to the other neophytes. Women always got the first, the best part of the animal.
The women who lived at the missions?
Correct.
And the Indian women? The converted Indian women?
All of them. The ones that were part of the family, as well as the Indians that work weaving, doing a fabric, as well as producing soap.
Why was it that the women and the girls got the best part of the meat?
Perhaps it has something to do with our values. We had always tried to have a lot of respect for señoritas, and we, as caballeros, tried to provide them with the best.
Tell us about the relationship that the missions had with the Indian people.
I could speak only for the missions in which I was directly in touch with. As you probably know, there are several missions all the way across California. But the ones in San Diego, San Luis, San Gabriel, San Juan Capistrano, the priests at time mistreated the Indians, and I did witness the times when Indians will refuse to obey orders from the priest. They were punished. They were severely punished.
What kind of orders would they refuse to obey?
Well, the Indians, the neophytes, were supposed to work the land, and sometimes they wouldn't do it. And they were supposed to keep themselves away from the girls, and all of them had a certain number of responsibilities that they had to comply with. And many times when they wouldn't do it, that created problems. At times they escaped, or they will take something that did not belong to them, and that was punished.
Let's talk for a while about California. You saw California under three different governments, actually four different governments, the Spanish government, the Mexican government, the Bear Flag revolt for a brief time, and the American government. What kinds of changes did you see?
Well, I was born, just like you said, when California was part of Spain. And we received the orders from the viceroyalty in what it was called New Spain. And those were the years when I was a young boy and then a teen. And my father worked in the garrison of both San Diego and San Gabriel. We were basically worried about the insurrections of the Indians, because the Indians will come in and attack the missions. Right after a couple of years, when my father died, Mexico became independent. And in many ways, there was not a big change. The only thing we noticed was that the power of the church was not as strong as when it was part of Spain.
Would that include the power that they exerted at the missions?
Yes. But in many ways, the central government being so far from California, it took months before we reached orders that were given in central government. What I do remember is that the time that it took Mexico to become independent from Spain, it was like when I was a young boy of 10 until I was about 20. And so I saw this transformation, and I was part of that transformation in a certain way. The character of being Mexican territory was not quite well established. So in some respects, we identify ourselves as Californios rather than Mexicanos, and not to mention that we were loyal to Central Mexico.
Californios are people who were born in California who were not Indian.
That's correct. People that were considered gente de razón.
And by gente de razón, what do you mean?
It was just a way to differentiate from the Indians. The Indians were not considered gente de razón because now in my older years, I don't see things the same way. But back in those years, I did agree with the rest of the Californians that the Indians were not able to govern themselves. They lack the process of thinking that it was required to carry out a certain kind of urbanized or civilized community.
They became gente de razón, or people who could think or reason, when they were baptized into the Catholic Church.
To a certain extent.
But was there more?
Yes. It was not only a matter of being baptized, but they needed to learn the language.
The Spanish language.
The Spanish language. And they needed to understand the values of the Catholic Church.
What happened to Indians who wanted to go back to their own lands, their own people, and leave the missions?
When the priests were in charge of the missions, they did not allow that because, to a certain extent, by law, the Indians, the neophytes, had the obligation to stay with the mission. So whenever they tried to run away, a garrison would go after them and bring them back to the mission, and they would be punished.
They would forcefully capture them?
To a certain extent, yes.
How did they punish them? What did they do?
They whipped them. For the most part, they whipped them, or they kept them in quarters without communicating with some of the other Indians.
Señor Pico, as governor of California on two different occasions, what were some of your concerns for the well-being of the state, some of the things that you stood for?
I will talk only about the second administration, because the first one was just very brief, and it was kind of divided. But on my second administration in 1845, I stood for justice. There were some problems that we were not able to control, such as people taking advantage of the ones that couldn't defend themselves. There was a lot of stealing, and there was a lot of irregularities that we will not tolerate.
Stealing of what? By whom?
Some of the soldiers that came with Señor Michel Torena were stealing horses and actual things that the people had in their homes. And I wanted to set up a certain kind of a justice system in which those people who will violate the rules will pay the consequences.
What kind of a system did you have in mind?
Pretty much a tribunal, a court system that will decide on what kind of punishment will be fair for the people that will violate the rules and regulations. In addition to the justice system that I was discussing with some of my advisors, I was also pro-education, and I proposed the possibility of establishing a well-set center of education in which our children will be educated. They will learn to read and write.
Describe what you had in mind. Schools for everyone?
Well, schools mainly for the people who were citizens, but at the same time to go a step further of what the missions had. The missions attempted to educate the Indians. So I had in mind the possibility that starting with a simple education will eventually turn out into areas that will cover either the law, the practice of law, or perhaps training our people to become priests, or learn other areas that will be good for our community.
Education for boys and girls?
Yes. I myself was educated by a woman. Señora Carrillo was the first lady who helped me with my first letters. She taught me how to read. And my brother-in-law, Jose Antonio Carrillo, is the one who taught me how to write. He asked me to write the same sentences over and over until I would perfect my writing.
Before we close, Señor Pico, I'd like to ask you if you could tell us about some of the books or one of the books that you've read that you've enjoyed.
Well, I cannot think of any particular book that I read, but I will recommend you to read a narrative that has been publicized by Gentleman Bancroft, whom I dictated part of my life story.
What's that narrative called?
It's called Pio Pico, A Historical Narrative. And I talk about my life to Senora Thomas Savage in the 70s.
Governor Pio Pico, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
And Roberto Garza, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me to your talk show.
How do you see Pio Pico as being an important person in California history?
Pio Pico is a man who lived a very long life. He died at the age of 93. He was born in San Gabriel Mission, and he saw all these changes that happened. He was born under the Spanish flag and then became Mexican, and then he became very wealthy when the Yankees had taken over California.
The contributions that he made to our state as a Mexican governor two times.
The first time was extremely brief, and he did not have time basically because the government was divided. The second time, he had grand plans, and he had a group of advisors that several things could have taken off the ground. But it was, the timing wasn't appropriate because the following year, the Fremont forces took over Sonoma, and the Americans took over California.
So this would be in about 1854, 1855?
No, this is actually in 1846. California became a state of the United States in 1850. And by this time, Pio Pico was no longer involved in politics. He was mostly a ranchero who was acquiring land, and this is the time, the 50s was a very good time for Pio Pico.
As a scholar who has studied extensively about Pio Pico and presents him in character as if you were him, what do you want people to know about him, to see and feel?
Once again, the fact that Pio Pico came from nothing. When his father died, his family was practically penniless, and he rose from nothing to a very prominent position. Not to mention the fact that he became, some people have said that he was perhaps one of the wealthiest men in California.
He lost most of his wealth by the time of his death, did he not?
That's true.
What happened?
On the one hand, it was the fact that there were many North Americanos coming down to California, and they were taking advantage. there were many squatters who will take over the land without asking permission to the owners, and even when the owners fought over this land to the land commission, they will not move. And there were many people that were very dishonest, and they found ways to take away from the Mexicans as much as they could. And they, most of the important Californians, lost most of their property and land to the hands of the Anglos.
Roberto Garza, I want to thank you for joining us. But before we close, I want to ask you what I just asked Pio Pico, and that's about an interesting book on this topic.
There are a couple of books that I will recommend on, in order to understand what was life like in the times when Pico was alive. Martin Cole, who was the curator for the Pico Mansion in the 1970s and 80s, he wrote a couple of books. One of them is Pio Pico Narrative and Pio Pico Miscellany. And this one, he gives different vignettes of the life of Pio Pico. I will recommend that one. I will also recommend The Decline of the California Dons by Leonard Pitt.
Roberto Garza, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Pio Pico, the last Mexican governor of California, is brought to us in this archive edition of Radio Curious, recorded in February of 1998, in the person of Roberto Garza. The book that Pio Pico recommended is the Bancroft Narrative, Pio Pico, a Historical Narrative. The books that Roberto Garza recommends are Pio Pico Miscellany by Martin Cole, who is a curator of the Pio Pico Museum, and The Decline of Californios, The Social History of the Spanish-Speaking Californias, 1846 to 1890, by Leonard Pitt. There are over 750 archives on our website, radiocurious.org, and I'm honored to tell you that Radio Curious is now part of the collection at the Library of Congress. We appreciate your cards, ideas, and letters, and do enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The postal address is 700 West Smith Street, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.